preempted from 7 to 11 p.m. on convention days as Pacifica brings you the coverage you've come to expect from this country's free speech leaders. Tune in to 90.1 for more convention details as more convention details become available. You're listening to Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpfthouston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Welcome to a new edition of Technology Bites here on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Did you say nude edition?
Did I?
That's kind of frightening.
News.
It was the news edition.
I thought what happened in Vegas stayed in Vegas, including all the nudity. Wait.
Jay's pants stayed in Vegas.
Barrett's keys may have stayed in Vegas.
Yes, they did. I think.
Well, I'm trying to lose my voice, so if you're lucky, I'll just completely run out of vocal cords.
I think I might have got whatever you got.
Uh-oh. What I initially thought was a hangover ended up being like
crud,
some kind of actual biological.
So mostly just
virus.
In your throat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so is mine.
And yeah, I would have coughed, but it's like your whole body racks trying.
It hadn't gone that far yet. I'm hoping it will. No. It's gone as far as it will go. Like, no. It's in my throat. My tonsils are swollen. I might be running a fever every now and then, but I don't feel horrible. I just feel kind of tired.
I didn't feel terrible. I just, you know, scratchy throat, coughing, tightness.
I haven't coughed.
Really? You will.
Thanks.
I got it from Barrett.
Patient zero. Thank you.
Barrett, you know.
I had a very light case of it, though. I just lost my voice. I thought it was just like the DEF CON funk, you know.
Well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. No?
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Finally here.
Yeah, my computer had lost all power, so I'm having to let it juice up for a while before I can get online.
We're obviously very well prepared.
It's a professional show.
I blame the delayed flights.
Yeah, everyone got delayed by a handful of hours. I don't think anyone got them before midnight or 1, huh?
Yeah, I was in about 11:30 midnight.
My flight got delayed
3 hours for me.
Mine got delayed from 7:05 until 8:20.
That's not bad.
And I should have got in around midnight, and we got in at 1:30.
Yeah, we're coming back from DEF CON in Vegas, and we weren't flying together.
Walking Dead to begin with, really.
Yeah,
shell shocked and just
we were lucky to have
it.
Made it to the airport at all, and then just beset with tragedy and.
Did you opt out, Flicted?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
I went through security twice, and I didn't have to opt out.
Well, the first time they just let me go through the
metal detector.
But yeah, leaving Las Vegas, they were sending people through the scanner, the scatter scanner or whatever, and then the people in front of me, I was like, oh, I have to do it. And then they turned, and they let like 3 or 4 people through the just metal detector, and so I was like, oh, I'll walk through there. And I turned to walk through there, and then the security guard stood in front of me and stopped me. And he's like, you need to go through that line, sir. And I was like, I don't want to go through that. And he's like, and he had it memorized. He's just like, sir, if you don't go through that, you'll have to go through this, and you have to whatever to a pat down and da 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 public search.
Point you said, ooh.
Actually, what I said was, I was like, all right, let's do it.
Let's do this.
Mission accomplished.
Yay. That's pretty much what I said.
I did the same thing. I was kind of surprised. Like, I didn't so much appreciate the attention around the midsection, but the upper back was nice. Like, I was pretty tense. They really do a number on you. Like, I felt more relaxed.
Well, I was actually surprised because normally if I've ever gotten a pat down, like at clubs or whatever, they pretty much just concentrate on areas where you might hide something.
Do they look under your piercings?
They pretty much covered, like, they did a rub down more than a pat down. I mean, they went across my whole, chest, with their hands,
with
pressure. Rubbing.
You could feel pressure.
Yeah, rubbing across my whole chest, the whole midsection. I mean, they went all, the only thing they didn't do, and I don't remember where I was when I had this happen. Oh, I know where it was.
Ask our audience if they're getting turned on right now.
I went to a rave, and there was a security guard at the rave, and he was doing a pat-down. And it was a pat-down until he got to the end, and he patted down the ankle, and then his hand just came up and grabbed my crotch. But he did it to everybody, so. Yeah, so that. But so he didn't do that. He just kind of bumped his hand up,
a couple times. And oddly inside, the kids were doing the same thing.
That could be dangerous. You don't just bump that area.
Apparently, I was talking.
Sorry.
I talked to my groper afterwards.
Did you get his number?
Did you guys have a cigarette?
No, I don't smoke. He probably wanted to. But he said, yeah, but apparently, like, all the people coming out of DEF CON on Sunday, that everyone was opting out. That it actually slowed things down quite a bit because they didn't have enough people to do all the opting out and man the scanners and everything to where it was, like, it was a big pain.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Barrett
that's
really closed interesting. His eyes and prepared for his pat down. It was all done. He opened his eyes, and there was John.
No. I did have to go back through again, and this time I was like, can I request Stan this time?
Captain Crunch, right there on your TSA duty. All right, so welcome to the show. You can visit us online at geekradio.com, also on the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bytes. That is, IRC is like old school Twitter for those of you who are unfamiliar. We have a link on our webpage that allows you to participate in the IRC if you're not familiar with the technology. You can call us a little bit later in the show, 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT to be on the air with us. We'll be taking your calls a little bit later in the show. You can also use the website to send a contact to us. If you don't want to call us but you have a question, you can send us a question via the website at geekradio.com. We're also streaming live to the interwebs via kpft.org. There's a link there if you want to listen online, if you want to tune in. You can also use that link on your mobile phone or whatever if you want to stream the radio station or stream the show to your mobile device.
And on Friday.
On Friday. Not on Friday.
Yeah. The Geek Gathering. possibly with alcohol.
Definitely with alcohol.
Do we know this?
I mean, we will if we will source
it. Alcohol one way or the other, whether or not it's sold, you know,
by
legally.
The establishment.
Yeah,
right.
Whether it's brought in.
Right. So it's 7:30 at Aperture, formerly known as Coffee Grounds, which is at the corner of Bagby and McGowan.
So they have a new sign up, or does it
they
still say
have
coffee?
A new sign up?
They have a new sign up.
The signage is there.
Who was there last time? Were you up there last time?
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, it was up.
I didn't notice.
But it's smaller than the Coffee Grounds sign, and you can actually still see the outline of the Coffee Grounds sign where it was on the behind it. So, but it's I think we'll all be there. Groovehouse, will you
be there? Groovehouse is shooting a show Friday.
Yes, I am.
Pete may be here. He's on IRC saying, bring me on.
He is.
Oh, he is on. Wow.
Hello, Pete.
I'm here. Yes. Hello.
Sorry, Pete. It took a while for my computer to
power up.
Uncharacteristically, he was unprepared to bring you on the air. Unlike him in so many ways. It was so good having Pete in the studio last week, too.
Agreed. I was thinking about that on the way up here. I was like, it was really awesome to have him here.
Yeah, so.
Yes, so watch it, Flick, dude. Make sure you keep your stuff together.
We don't have to lose him to get you here.
No, it used to be a whole... Everyone used to be here.
Actually, man. There's an extra mic in there. So y'all
there's an extra mic and a couple of chairs. So.
Come on down.
Yes. All right, I'll head right over.
Yep, it's good night. I'm Peter Hughes. All right, so that being said, all that good stuff and funness, I'm going to take this opportunity not to talk for a little bit and let Flicted bring on the Technology Bytes Info Shot with Peter Hughes live from San Antonio.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So another week and another security breach somewhere. Dropbox has admitted that the spam reported by its users over the last few weeks was the direct result of a security breach. Oops. Both login names and passwords were stolen from an unstated number of users, including a Dropbox employee. That account contained a list of the client's email addresses, which led to the spam in the first place. In response, it's contacted those affected to protect their accounts and outlined several new security features. These include a two-factor authentication coming in several weeks and a new automated feature that will check for suspicious activity. A new landing page will also show you any logins to your account, while Dropbox repeated that always helpful advice to avoid reusing passwords on multiple websites. Like, in case you haven't heard that enough from us and anybody else responsible who's got some sense of responsibility, noting that a breach on one site can cause an entire cascade of grief. Now, on the more positive side of developments, this one's kind of cool. There's two things that hold back the mass adoption of solar energy for, you know, sustainable power. One of them is storing and transmitting the excess power, you know, sort of the daylight problem. And there are people who are working on that, you know, with new ways to store power, you know, better batteries, etc. But the other one is the high cost of solar panels. One reason solar panels are so expensive is that it's tricky to get electric currents from semiconductors, which are the materials used to convert solar radiation into electrical energy. Up until now, there were only so many materials you could use, but now there's been a breakthrough that will enable manufacturers to make efficient photovoltaics using almost any semiconductor, including cheap things like metal oxides, sulfides, and phosphides. Yeah, I got a bunch of them laying around at home. A typical photovoltaic cell is built with silicon and treated with chemicals. This treatment is called doping, and it creates the driving force needed to extract power from the cell. It has nothing to do with the Tour de France, just in case you're following that at home. Photovoltaics can also be built from cheaper materials, but the problem is they can't be doped chemically, and you get the lower efficiency. The method developed by Professor Alex Zetti's research group at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab and University of California at Berkeley makes it possible to dope nearly any semiconductor by applying an electric field instead of chemicals. So they've put in a paper published in the journal Nano Letters. Essentially, graphene was their inspiration. It's highly conductive, one atom thick sheet of carbon. So that's the new thing. The team at Zetti Research Group began experimenting with graphene as a transparent for silicon photovoltaics, and then realized they could directly influence the semiconductor conductor with an electric field. Once they realized a very thin conductor could be used, they could realize a very narrow one could be suitable as well. So you could do graphene as a sheet, or you could do nanowires, extremely narrow nanowires. But they are optimistic. You know, there's the solar manufacturing industry has, you know, been on the path. It's been on for a while. Will Regan, lead author of the paper, is optimistic that this new method will be adopted, noting that these cells could be made using simple and cost-effective tweaks to existing fabricating processes. So hopefully, you know, one of these times, all these stories with these advances, there was another one with a new record as far as the conversion rate on the, you know, the efficiency on a solar panel. This stuff at some point has got to add up to something where it's a much less expensive and easy to deploy and usable solar that'll be useful for more places. I mean, obviously Texas is ideal as far as having plenty of sunlight, because we're certainly not troubled by clouds and rain, especially in the summertime. In other news, this one's an interesting rumor, but then at the end of this, there is a statement from AT&T. There's a rumor from the Boy Genius Report from three different sources that AT&T has been deliberately trying to steer its shoppers away from the iPhone. Regional sales managers have allegedly been handing instructions to store managers, telling them that people looking for smartphones should be directed towards Android or Windows phone devices instead. Even if a person comes into a store looking for an iPhone, workers have reportedly been told to show shoppers other options so they can, quote, make an informed decision. At least some retail staff has supposedly been banned from using iPhones as their company-owned devices. One source comments that the iPhone used to represent as much as 80% of the smartphone sales at his region's stores, but that the number has dropped to between 50 and 60%. Still 72% of all AT&T activations during the second quarter this year, but it may be that they're wanting to, that they don't like having so much of their profits riding on one device from one company, or else they're not happy about the unusually high fees that they pay out for each iPhone sold. The other issue, you know, the third thing might be that the demand that iPhone users place on the network, because when you're on iPhone, that consumes plenty of 3G bandwidth. The one from AT&T to MacNN was, quote, "The idea that we wear any customer away from a particular device couldn't be more far-fetched. Our reps do what it takes to align customer needs with the best device for them. iPhone remains one of our most popular devices, which doesn't happen by steering people away from it. Our reps are encouraged to try all devices so they are more knowledgeable on our industry-leading smartphone lineup." Notice he doesn't really say, he doesn't say they're not doing it. He just keeps giving hints that there's reasons why they shouldn't. So I don't know. You know, obviously the relationships between companies and businesses can be tricky, and nobody wants to be too beholden to only one company. That would certainly seem to be a risky thing for a retailer. In other news, Microsoft has confirmed that Windows 8 has been released to manufacturing, and their OEM partners now have final code. For those of you who have been, you know, waiting with bated breath for the next operating system for Microsoft, they confirmed it, and it should be on systems that you could see starting on or around October the 26th. So it could be a happy Halloween if you're a Windows 8 kind of person. If you want the specifics, devs will be able to download the final version of Windows 8 via their MSDN subscription starting August 15th. And people testing it through their TechNet subscriptions also on the 15th. On the 16th, customers with existing Microsoft Software Assurance for Windows will be able to download Windows 8 Enterprise Edition through the Volume License Service Center. Also on that same day, Microsoft Partner Network members will have access to WinAid. And then there's other ones. If you're lower ranked than some of those things, you can find out from Microsoft when your deal is going. Microsoft also has just affirmed that starting today, any qualifying business in a supported market can now submit a Metro-style app for Windows 8. So that's coming. That shift, it'll be interesting to see how much of a shift there's been. It is known that Apple sold about 3 million copies of Mountain Lion since it was released last week, which is a pretty fair number. It'll be very interesting to see the numbers on Windows 8, especially, I guess, people who are buying it to use on, you know, to update their existing operating system on a machine. In other new stuff, Amazon Instant Video is now on available on iPads. So if you belong to Amazon Prime and you didn't have you have a or one of those kinds of things and you wanted to watch it, now that's available. Let's see, still problems with it. The selection struggles at times, and the Prime streaming side, it can be difficult. Amazon Select Movies and TVs for purchase matches anyone's, and its prices are always competitive with and often lower than Apple's. The only additional downside is that because of Apple taking 30% of any in-app purchase, you can't buy movies directly through Amazon's Instant Video iPad app. Instead, you have to go to Amazon in a browser, do your purchase, then go back to the app. But, you know, if you're saving money and some of that, it's worth the inconvenience, presumably. If you're a Prime member, you need to download that. You know, you should probably do this app immediately. If you're a Prime member and you've got an iPad, then that probably would help you out. That helps some people who were deciding whether they should be a Prime member to make the switch now, because they could actually, you know, watch stuff on it. Of course, mentioning ads, that leads us to Apple rumory stuff, of course, always. The big newest rumor is more specific, that there will be an event. The rumor is that there will be an event on September 12th that the iPhone 5 or the next new iPhone or whatever they call it would be announced at that point, and the iPod mini, if it exists and if they're going to announce it, would be the same kind of thing. You know, a lot of places have kind of jumped the gun and said that, you know, it's been reported, and I've seen it around where they've said that it's for certain. But no, the deal is there's a rumor of it, and a lot of people kind of jumped on the rumor about the 12th is the most specific one I've seen. The phone itself is supposedly slated for a September 21st release. And there's not really been any other word of when exactly the rumored 7-inch iPad tablet would hit shelves, although there's talk it may hit the market at the same time. One of the things is that backs up the, you know, pseudo confirmations. None of this stuff makes it certain, but certainly people have gotten better, it seems to me, at kind of snaking out what's going on in the Apple in the Apple world. In their numbers, you know, in the down in the guts of all the stuff that they have to report for stock market stuff that we don't follow, but some people dig through. There is a big spike in its prepayment for inventory components. In other words, all the pieces that they make phones and perhaps iPad minis out of, and that's been very high. And that usually, you know, the way it looks to people who know more about this stuff than certainly you or me, is that that's the build up to a new phone and perhaps a new iPad. So there's what it is. You know, presumably soon, if there's going to be an event in September, pretty soon Apple has to invite people, and when they do, you'll know it. And if they do, that may be an indicator that we're getting close to a new iPhone, and knowing whether or not there'll be one more thing that might be an iPad mini. A couple last things. This one's a fun one. Did you pre-order the Google's Nexus Q, you know, the ball shaped thing that would let you do if you're a real Android head, would let you do cool stuff to stream media to your TV? Because if you did, the bad news is the Nexus Q won't go on sale in July, like Google said. But the good news for you is that Google has delayed it to improve the improve, add new functions to the device, and you know, improve what it is, and how, you know, improve how it works. But if you pre-ordered it, they've stopped accepting pre-orders, but the ones who have already pre-ordered it will be getting it for free. So instead of getting it for $300, or instead of paying $300 for a device that's still in the process of becoming, Google is going to ship the Nexus Qs to pre-order customers for free. So that's pretty sweet. You know, for missing a date, that's a nice way to make the people who supported them by pre-ordering, they should feel pretty good. I'm not one of them, so there's no bias on that. But if you were really that into the Nexus Q and you ponied up for the pre-order piece, then it just turned into a freebie. So all you time travelers can go back and get yourself a free $300 device, you know. Anyways, finally, the last thing is a Google thing. Google Wallet. It's been hampered by a number of limitations since its launch. You know, that's for, you know, with your like phone, you know, using it for paying things as a device. Not the least of which, things hampering it was limited device compatibility. And the bigger problem was probably its lack of support for most major credit and debit cards. Today that changed. Big Google's mobile payment system. Now you can use any credit or debit card you wish with it and take them with you from one device to the next. Early versions of the digital wallet used the phone's secure local storage to protect your card info. Now it's all in the cloud, allowing you to sync your preferred payment method across multiple devices and keep track of both your online and in-store purchases through Google's web wallet. Perhaps most importantly, they've upped the security ante by allowing you to disable individual devices in case something, you know, happens to it. That's certainly a pretty big step on the kind of device wallet, you know, the Google Wallet and similar type devices. And that's the news.
All right. Thanks for the news. And Groovehouse had a call in the queue for us with a great, funny pat-down story, but from members only, too. We were looking forward to that, but she hung up. So that sounds about par for the course for members only. And hopefully we'll just go to her. Oh, she called back. She says, you know what? I can listen to Pete on the radio, not on the phone. All right, so Technology Bites is ready to take your call. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. If you have a question or just want to be on the air and goof with the geeks. Groovehouse?
Yes.
What do we have, or who do we have first?
All right, up first on the show with a funny pat-down story, we're going to talk to members only.
Hello, members only.
Hey, so the flow of conversation kind of lost steam here. You still want to hear my pat-down story?
Hell yeah.
It's pretty humorous.
It better be.
Well, I never fly, hardly ever, so I had forgotten about the x-ray machine things. And this was last October, and I was running late to catch a flight, and I'm wearing this little short mini dress and these cowboy boots. And it's probably a little bit pertinent to the story that I have size triple D boobs, so I hide stuff in them all the time, like on purpose during airplane things, you know, because you can do that. So,
so you use your bra as a secret stash?
I do all the time. I'll realize I have my tweezers or something they don't want, and I just stick them in my boob. It works great.
That's
I can
not
learn
water balloon
fights this way too. I'm always having the last one. But in any case, so I'm rushing through, and I'm bare legged, wearing these cowboy boots and this little dress. And they stop me, and they say you need to go through the X-ray machine. I'm like, oh no, I'm not going to go through that. Sorry, I forgot about it. And they give me a really hard time about it. And the lady's like, ma'am, just go through it. We have a long line. I'm like, no, I'm not going to go through that. And she says, well, if you don't, I'm going to have to pat you down. I said, that's fine. Go ahead. And she continues arguing with me. It's not any worse than a mammogram. You get mammograms? I'm like, no, ma'am, I actually don't. I think those are bad for you, too. I get thermography. She's like, well, it's not any worse than an x-ray. Don't get them, ma'am. Well, ma'am, you need to just go through that. I'm like, I'm not going to go through that. You can pat me down if you want. I'm not going to do that.
I have contraband.
And she continues. I'll actually shorten it, but she continues trying to talk me out of it. Finally, she says, fine, but this is not going to be pleasant. I'm like, fine, do what you need to do. So she says, step over here. So I step over where she tells me. My boots are off, obviously. So I'm barefoot, bare-legged, wearing a short skirt, just short dress, and she pats my knees, only my knees, and she said, I'm going to pat your around your underwear area now. And I said, fine, but you should know I'm not wearing underwear. And she looked at me and she said, you're clear. Have a nice day.
I think I'll do that next time.
You're going to go with boots and a short skirt with no underwear? Now, that'll be a DEF CON to remember.
That's right. I couldn't believe you. I mean, girl, she didn't check anything. Not my boobs, not my bra, not my waist, nothing.
And thank you. You just taught the terrorists how to win.
I know. Don't wear underwear. Isn't that funny? I thought you'd appreciate that.
We
did. Yeah, we did.
I was flabbergasted. I never expected her to say this.
I don't think she expected to hear what you had to say either, apparently.
I was really just being kind. I thought she might want to know. But, you know, All right. Whatever. All right, guys. That's all I called to tell you. I thought it was a funny story.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Well, that just sets the tone for the whole show, I suppose.
I, too, am commando.
I'm not wearing a skirt. All right. 713-526-5738. If you'd like to be on the air with us tonight, so give us a call. Groovehouse?
Yes.
I see we have calls in the queue.
We do, and we have room for more.
We do have room for more. So 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air with us. Who do we have up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to take Scott.
Scott.
I bought a new computer July 6th, and the first week after, I was able to download a big backlog of email. But since then, I haven't been able to download it, except for once when I got about downloaded about 30 messages, and then it quit. I can look at the email on the website, the ISP's website, so I know what my email is, but I can't download it anymore.
What program are you using?
Pardon?
Which email program are you using?
Thunderbird. A fairly old version. I think it may be 1.0.
Well, and I assume you have a high-speed internet connection?
It's a dial-up internet connection.
Well, it may be maybe taking a long time for it to pull down and index all of your email. If you have a lot of mail on the server, thousands of messages on the mail server, and you're trying to pull down and your computer's trying to make an index of that over a dial-up connection, that's going
to
be a problem.
Especially
okay, it's
with
getting
attachments.
Up to about 600 or 700 messages now. It was 900 messages when I first had the backlog, when I got the new computer, and I'm eventually managed to download them all, but now since then I haven't. It's something's happened, something's changed.
Well, I don't know what that would be. I would say that trying to download, you know, a lot of email over a dial-up connection can cause problems, especially if you might have interrupted it. Maybe if you had 900 messages that you saw, but you had more and you interrupted the download process, you might have broken your index on that. So one thing you might try doing is creating a new email account profile in Thunderbird or even another email program, connecting to your mail and letting it try to download it for a while and see, you know, let it run overnight. Because like I said, over dial-up with a lot of mail, it's going to take a while to build that index.
Yeah. Well, is there a possibility a virus could be causing trouble?
Well, I mean, you say you just bought the computer in July, and I know that you've called into the show for the last several years, and I know you've heard us talk about viruses and spyware and such.
Yeah.
Do you think that you've run afoul of a virus? Do you engage in behavior that
might get
you there?
Well, I don't see any special reason to. I have this temporary Norton security program. They let me have 60 days of it. That came with the computer. I also got two discs of an antivirus program. I don't know what it is, but I haven't installed that yet. And besides, I'm worried there might be a conflict with the Norton program.
Well, you know, sometimes when you the antivirus software will look at all of the email coming down and scan it for viruses, so you may be running afoul of that. That's going to slow down the email download process as well.
Yeah.
Is it a desktop or a laptop?
desktop.
Okay. Well,
and I'm wondering about just reinstalling the system completely. The second day
just for
I had
the email?
The computer. This was before I got an internet connection at all. I made the recovery disk. In fact, I made two copies of them, but I don't see right now how to get them going.
Well, where'd you buy the computer from?
Micro Center.
Is it one of the Micro Center branded computers,
well,
or is it an HP or Dell or what?
It is a, let's see, it's a Gateway.
Gateway. Okay, here's what I recommend that you do. I recommend that you take some time, if you want to know how to use the recovery disk that Gateway helped, you know, provided or let you make, contact the Gateway tech support and see what they have to say, and maybe they can help you out with any problems. If it's brand new and it's under warranty, they should be able to explain how to use their recovery software.
And in addition, Micro Center has a really good customer service department. They have, you can bring your computer into them. They have a little room. They'll sit down with you and they'll help you do stuff. And if you bought the computer, it's, you
that's
know,
a good
it's,
point.
It's a good service for them.
Unfortunately, this is a desktop, you know, that's
I see people sitting in there with their big monster.
Yeah, they have keyboards and monitors. So you could actually take your desktop computer and go down to Micro Center and hook it up. And you could also take advantage of their high-speed internet to pull all your mail down.
That's but don't take your monitor and think you're taking your computer. unless it's an iMac
or a one piece.
Couple of brands.
Yeah,
so
Gateway
all
has some one-piece system. So.
All right, 713-526-5738. I see one call in the queue. Plenty of open lines. Who's up next?
All right, up next, we are going to take Mike.
Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I have a desktop computer that I actually got from Micro Center a number of years ago, and it's running Vista operating system.
Yeah.
And recently it started to go into repair mode when I started up in the morning, and it goes through several cycles. It's never the same exact sequence, but I have to go through several cycles of this before it gives me my desktop and I can use it. And it says it's repaired, but when I start back in again the next day, it goes through the same thing.
Well, so you're probably experiencing some kind of data corruption that's causing Vista to run the repair when you reboot.
Could be a bad hard drive. That's
possible. Yeah, it could be a sign of a bad hard drive or a hard drive that's trying to go bad.
Okay.
How old did you say the computer was? Got to be several years with Vista.
Yeah, it's 3 or 4 years.
Well, the first thing you could try is it what brand did you say it was?
I got it at Micro Center. I don't know right offhand what it is. I think an HP.
Okay. It probably has some kind of diagnostics you can run.
Yeah.
That if you, I don't know all the. I know Dell, for example, has a diagnostic where you press F2 to enter, or F12 to get a boot menu, and one of them is a hardware diagnostics that'll check the hard drive to see if there's a problem. I wouldn't be surprised if the HP has that. But what I would consider doing, first of all, is just back up any important files that you have.
Yeah, I did that, yeah.
And then consider just doing a clean install. Use the recovery disks and restore the computer back to factory fresh. That might clear it up. But if you do have a hard drive that's trying to fail, you want to determine that before you waste too much time on it. So check to see if there's a boot diagnostic option on the HP to run a check on your hard drive and so forth.
Okay, one of the things it says during all that process is that it thinks I have recently installed some new hardware, and it says uninstall that, but I haven't installed any new hardware recently, so I don't know if that's any help to diagnose.
Well, that could be a sign that a piece of hardware is trying to fail and that it's redetecting it when
it
boots up, and that's
And it doesn't say what hardware it is?
No, it doesn't.
Hmm.
Well, there is an HP diagnostic tool, and I'm looking up. I just did a Google search on HP diagnostic, and it's just taking a pay. Let's see. Find and fix common problems using HP diagnostic tools. HP Print and Scan Doctor, HP Windows 7 Printer Install Wizard, HP Hardware Diagnostic Utility. All right, yeah, there's a utility you can download. It's 3 megs. If you Google search HP...
Mm-hmm.
Let me get back to that page there. If you Google search HP Diagnostic, the first link that comes up, find and fix common. It says find and fix common printer problems.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the second one, there's a There's a system check for notebooks. There's system diagnostic utilities. Anyway, you'll find the software you need. It might be worth running that against your computer to see if you can determine what's going on.
I'll do that. Thank you. Also, could I take this computer into Micro Center?
They'll charge you for it because it's out of warranty.
Yeah, but okay.
You could.
The other thing that, you might do is call them first.
Yeah.
And they can give you some details about what it might cost. In some cases, you know, they may be willing, if it's something that they think may be simple, they may not charge you much or if anything at all.
Yeah. Okay, great. I'll try the diagnostics and then we'll see what happens.
All right, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's all of our calls. Thank you and good night. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We are entertaining your calls this evening.
We're entertaining ourselves.
And we're just damn entertaining.
Hello, my baby. Hello.
So, yeah, Geek Gathering, Friday.
No Groove House.
No Groove
come
House.
Out. There will be no Groove House, so come on out.
Are you a maybe on the Facebook page?
I don't think I replied to this one.
Oh, you didn't even bother to reply.
I think he's probably blocked all invites from Technology Bites Radio by now. All right. You know, that is a very cool feature, by the way. If you are finding yourself flooded with invites because people are inviting you to something that you can't possibly be interested in or get to because it's in another state or country, but you get invites from them all the time, when you decline the invite on Facebook, there's an option that shows up that says ignore all invites from this person, and then you never get bothered by them again. So, So for example, the Technology Bites Geek Gathering, I invite everybody on my friend list. And, you know, some of my friends live in Australia, and they'll never come to a Geek Gathering as long as they live.
I'll reply tonight.
So, but if you're tired of getting the invites from Technology Bites, then you just say ignore all invites from Jay Lee, and you'll no longer get those invites. And then you'll miss out on the really cool parties. All right, 713-526-5738. You got a call for us, Groovehouse?
I do.
Who is it?
All right, up next, we're going to take Rick.
Rick, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, I have a Dell computer. It's a laptop. I've had it for about almost 4 years. I got it refabbed, and up until recently, I mean, it's worked great. And I stopped using it for about a month and went to go turn it on, and it won't turn on at all. I figured maybe there was a power cord issue. I bought a new power cord, bought a new battery just in case, popped it in. It said the battery was fully charging, but it won't come on at all. I was trying to see if it was pointing me in the right direction.
How was it saying the battery was fully charging?
It's got the little light on the battery.
Okay, so your battery is definitely charging up when you're connected to power, but neither the power cord nor the battery seem to be lighting up the computer itself.
Yeah, every once in a while, I'll just go back and check it and try to put the power on, and the power indicator on the computer will light up red, and then it'll just stop lighting up.
Have you tried taking the battery out and just connecting it to AC power to see if it would start up?
Yeah, I tried doing that, and it did the same thing.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a physical hardware issue. It might just be something simple like if you say it's a Dell?
Yes.
Okay. What model Dell?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
I don't have it in front of me, so.
But you haven't memorized your beloved computer's brand and model number? All right. Well, I know with some Dells that I saw that are in that age bracket that the power button, there's a cable that goes from the power button to the system board underneath this plastic piece of bezel that if you pop the bezel off and you look in there, you can tighten up that connection on that wire and that'll fix it. Because it's just the power button actually is not making a direct connection to the system and it's not actually powering it on. And the cable gets loose on certain model Dells.
You know? All right.
But I don't know if that's
effective. If there's another issue than that, I mean, no, I just got to take it in to...
You take it in to have it repaired somewhere. The problem becomes is that if you've got a four-year-old laptop, unless it's really something special, it may not be worth how much it costs to get someone to look at it and consider fixing it. Because if it's not just the power cable, something loose, if it's like a bad system board or something like that, you're looking at a few hundred dollars to repair it at least. And chances are, you could, if it's a 4 or 5 year old laptop, you could probably buy a used one that works for the same price. So,
all right.
So you have to kind of measure out, and considering that it's 4 or 5 years old, it may also not be worth fixing, because if you spend a few hundred dollars to repair it, considering that a new laptop, even the lowest end laptop that you could buy today, the cheapest, least powered laptop you could buy today, is going to probably be more capable and have more power than that laptop. So rather than spend $200 to repair it, spend another couple hundred bucks and buy a new laptop and have quite a bit more computer for your money, warranty, reliability, and that sort of thing.
All right. Is there any way to retrieve the files that are on that laptop?
Easy, because you can just take the hard drive out and you can get a cable that allows you to connect it to the USB of a working computer and copy your files off.
Awesome.
What side of town do you live on?
I live on kind of close by Jersey Village.
There's a place, I mean, Jersey Village is a little ways away, but there's a place called the Computer Hospital that specializes in laptop repair, and you might want to see if how much they charge to do a checkout, because if it's just a cable or something simple, you know, might be worth letting them have a look at it.
All right. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks for your call. Good night. All right. So Groove House is in the process of screening calls. I don't want to deny him the opportunity to give us the next call, so we'll wait till he puts on his headphones, and there he is. Hi, Groovehouse.
Hello.
I don't want to deny you the opportunity to give us our next call.
Especially since we're not going to see him Friday. We got to get in some Groovehouse time tonight.
There you go.
Know?
Yeah, so another call?
Yeah, please.
Okay. All right, up next on the show, we're going to take Ben.
Ben, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. It's working late. I heard you guys on the radio. I said, hey, maybe they can help me.
Okay.
I was messing around with my laptop, and I really have no experience. I should have been doing it. And I was going into something in there, and it said if you uninstall or deactivate or something, whatever it is that I did, that it could make your computer run faster. And I did it, and I did like a whole bunch of things. And now I think I uninstalled everything from my computer.
Does it run faster?
Did you go into the...
It runs a lot faster. It runs faster, yeah.
What's the problem? It's running faster?
No, is that something that... I mean, you know, I don't even know the question. I guess my
care
of that.
There's a couple of different options where you can go into a Windows-based computer and optimize the performance. Now, one thing that Windows, that I dislike about Windows that it does, is if you go to add remove programs, sometimes it'll tell you, well, you haven't used this program in a certain amount of time, you haven't used that program in the years and years or whatever, and it gives you the opportunity to uninstall it. That isn't always a good idea, but there's other things in there where you can clean up cache files, temp files, and that sort of thing, turn off, you know, certain features, and it will speed up the performance of the computer. You know, what operating system is it?
It's Windows 7.
Okay, yeah, Windows 7 uses this thing called Arrow, and it makes it all the windows real pretty and makes it flashy and nice. And you have the opportunity to turn that kind of stuff off to give you more performance. So it doesn't hurt you to do it. It just makes the computer less eye candy, as it were.
Although, in Windows 7, if you have a decent graphics card, all that is offloaded to the graphics card, the CPU that's actually doing the work.
Right, but his situation is that he got poking around.
Yep.
He saw something that said, if you do this, it might make your computer faster, you know, if you want to. And he did it, but now he doesn't know what he did.
Well, I'm pretty much now the only thing I can do is turn it on.
Is it actually broken something? I mean, what?
Yeah. Now nothing works. I can't, any program that I try to open up, anything at all, it just says it cannot open, cannot find, Windows cannot find the file. Windows does not even know what Windows is at this point.
And maybe just running so fast that you can't see it.
Blur. That's all it is.
So you, when you are on the computer, do you have the option? See, unfortunately, without knowing what you did, it's hard to tell you how to back out of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I commend you on your willingness to dig in and experiment. That's a good way to learn, and hopefully you've learned something now. But do you? How old is the computer?
The computer, I believe I bought it in, it's probably going on 2 years old. It's a Samsung 650-something. But it's going on 2 years old. And
Windows 7 have a repair install option?
Yes, when you, there's a, and I don't remember this off the top of my head, but when you boot up, one of the options that you can invoke is a way to essentially run the repair console, just as in, same thing is true as in Windows Vista. And that lets you, it attempts to make certain repairs. It is not always successful. I'd say maybe about 20% of the time when I've done it, it's been successful.
Now, one of the things that that you can try, now, did you make the recovery disks, or do you have the recovery software?
Well, I say that I did. I remember paying the extra money to have them done when I purchased the computer, but it's, they don't have that, and I don't have the receipt. So, no, the answer.
You don't have the software necessary to reinstall the software?
No, sir. No, sir, I don't.
That's unfortunate.
Yes.
Who did you say makes the computer?
It was Samsung.
You might try contact.
Actually, I'm sorry. I do apologize. It's a Toshiba.
Toshiba. You might contact Toshiba to see if they sell they will sell you the system disks. In the past, I haven't had to do this in a long time, but in the past, it's not been more than $20 or $30 to have them send you out the factory reinstall software specific to your computer, which is very handy to have in situations like this.
Does Toshiba do the recovery partitions?
I don't know. Doing back then? I mean, what Barrett mentions is a lot of these computers give you the ability to recover from the actual hard drive. They have the recovery software in a separate partition on the hard drive. And when you boot up, there's a way for the computer to look at that partition and then reinstall all the system software. Do you know what model Toshiba you have by chance?
I want to say it is
650.
That's the only thing I can think. I remember is it's a Toshiba.
Isn't satellite C650?
Satellite, yes.
C650 recovery. Let's see. How can I restore a satellite Toshiba satellite C650 1CP without disk? Let me see what it says here. Yeah, we might go online and do a little bit of research on it, but there might be an option. I'm trying to
think. There was a time in there when Toshiba was trying to save a lot of money, so instead of like actually shipping out system disks with everything in DVDs, they would just they would put it upon the user, whoever bought the laptop, to actually have to burn them out to DVD. And sometimes they would have a little annoying where they would say, hey, you need to do this, you need to do this, but a lot of times they wouldn't, so unless you need to go and burn those out, you know, you're not going to have them. But it's worth looking on there. It's worth, you know, getting a manual. I'm trying to do it right now. We're just kind of having some slow download speeds.
And well, they're saying that if on the Toshiba, when you turn it on, if from being completely off, if you start pressing on the F11 key, and it should come up to some kind of a repair your computer option.
Okay.
And but if you Google search, you know, factory reinstall or restore Toshiba satellite C650 and see if you can find, you'll probably want to find the instructions and print them out and see if you can
even made it look like that. When the screen comes up, it looks like you're looking at it through a haze. It kind of grayed the screen. I mean, you can see it, but it just looks hazy. It's not bright or anything. It's kind of weird.
That sounds to me more like it would be a hardware issue or a video driver.
Bad, yeah. If it tore through a system and you made like moved a lot of references around, it could be running and like almost like so driverless that it's almost like in safe mode is what I'm thinking. Because not being able to find things, it sounds like maybe it moved a system file folder, like is you know, something integral to everything else, so it just doesn't know how to operate. So it's just kind of just barely making it.
Well, I heard you tell the last caller about the computer hospital. Is that always an option?
It's an option. I would steer clear of the big computer stores. Like, I mean, Micro Center might be worth going to, but for sure, someplace like the Computer Hospital, I feel like, you know, none of it's cheap, but, you know, if you go to someplace like Best Buy,
what they end up doing is they kind of give you this weird, this kind of generic blanket solution where they're going to just blow it away and reinstall everything. They're not going to give you like the individual, like, here's your situation. Let's look at your situation specifically and save your data and make sure you're doing the right thing to get out of this. So someplace like the Computer Hospital or Micro Center where you're actually working with a tech, it might be a better option than, say, like, you know, Best Buy or something like that. We're breaking up now.
Yes, you I am. Thank you, guys. Hey, you guys have a good night. I appreciate everything you do for us. You have a good night.
All right, good luck. Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right.
That's pretty good. Yes, I sound like the emergency broadcast. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
I think, wow, do we have time? Yeah,
we have about 3 minutes.
All right, three minutes.
Two.
We can start one. We can put them on hold.
All right. Who's up?
All right, up next, we are going to take Sunum.
Real. Sunum, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question. A parent of mine had passed away recently, and he had given us his passwords, but he had changed the password for his email, and like a lot of the, you know, bill statements and stuff like that goes to his email. So I was wondering if there was a way that I could, you know, access his email. He had provided the security questions as well as the security answers. But I don't know if there was a change in Yahoo policy or whatever it was, but it didn't work. So, I mean, we have the death certificates and things like that, but I was wondering...
The problem with Yahoo is getting a hold of somebody. Now, is it Yahoo through Southwestern Bell?
No.
No, so it's just like a free Yahoo email account.
That's right.
The problem is getting a hold of somebody at Yahoo. I have never talked to anybody who's actually spoken to a person. I don't even know if there is a person at Yahoo. Mm-hmm. So it gets tough to get a hold of somebody and present them with, you know, your claim. But have you looked on the Yahoo site? What have you found?
I'm saying that there have been other people, maybe this will go differently, but there have been other people who have been trying to recover Yahoo email passwords from Yahoo for family members that have, you know, passed away. Mm-hmm. And Yahoo apparently is, or was coming back, at least as recent as a couple of years ago. He's saying that there's the tort of privacy. But I don't know. That should expire upon death. So, let's see. I'm trying to find a successful story of someone actually doing this. There are a lot of people complaining about it.
But I tell you what. Why don't you do me a favor, Sam, and email me or use the contact form on the webpage with this, and let me see if I can do a little research and find out some options for you, okay?
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Good luck. And I look forward to hearing from you. All right, well, we are going to have to take a short break here at the top of the hour and do some station business. Oh, yeah, Afflicted wasn't here when I announced the new stations that were on.
Coast to coast.
Coast to coast. That's
really?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. There's a legacy blog that gives you how to... sorry.
Okay.
I got all excited.
Yeah. Well, we might have something for soon.
But yeah.
All right. Well, I just want to make sure that you didn't get so, you know, enthusiastic that you went over our 8 seconds left. All right. No. Technology Bites. We'll be right back after these messages. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Afflicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's Groovehouse.
In 2005, Academy Award-winning director Jonathan Demme set out to document the rebuilding of New Orleans' Lower Ninth Ward. When he met Carolyn Parker, what began as a historical documentary morphed into a vibrant character study of the courage and resiliency of this fearless matriarch and civil rights activist. I'm Carolyn Parker, The Good, The Mad, and The Beautiful, is Demme's intimate account of Parker's 5-year crusade to rebuild her house, her church, her community, and her life. See the film at the Museum of Fine Arts Houston Brown Auditorium Theater, presented by producer Daniel Wolf on Sunday, August 19th at 7:15 p.m. For information and tickets, go to www.mfah.org/films or call 713-639-7515.
We had no quarrel with anyone. We only want to stop riding the buses until we are treated as any other passenger.
Tune in on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. for the best of our past
present, and future from the vault. From the Vault is a weekly hour from the Pacifica Radio Archives, a national treasure of interviews, performances, and important moments. In this weekly documentary series, From the Vault presents archival audio to bring history to life.
It sounds like Harvey Milk is trying to send a message out right. to other gay or non-gay people who want to run for public office.
Get involved. Build your base. Build your support. You can't just get out there and say, hey, I'm a nice guy and I'm going to vote right on all the issues.
From the Vault airs Wednesday at 6 p.m. You can hear a repeat overnight Saturday following the program after hours. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Hey.
And,
go ahead.
I don't think there's a Barrett time.
No. Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
Oh, I don't remember how this part goes.
I don't know. Well, rumor out of town is that you went to DEF CON. We interrupt this skit to bring you DEF CON time. Yeah. Anyway, it's time for
DEF CON time.
That was extremely executed as I talked over everybody. Yeah. No, it's been tough recovering, so I just figured we could maybe go around whoever went and like give one thing, like highlight, maybe low light if there was a low light, and then one thing you actually learned or found scary or some knowledge you can drop on our user
base.
Some
of the things we can't, you know,
discuss.
Oh yeah, just what's appropriate for the radio.
Well, as you may or may not be aware, Flicted, Barrett, myself, went to Las Vegas for the DEF CON Hacking Conference.
Information Security Conference. Yeah, 20th year.
20th anniversary. There was at least 16,000 people there this year.
Were there?
13,000 is what I heard. They printed up 16,500 badges and had quite a bit left over, but there were over 13,000 people. I haven't seen the exact numbers yet.
You haven't either.
So all descended on... Well, and plus all the people that went for Black Hat.
Yeah, there are a lot of people there. A ton of people.
At the Rio Hotel. So, you know, and what you have, if you know geeks of any caliber whatsoever.
Say there were at least three that didn't have badges that were trying to get into everything.
Yeah. Well, as I tweeted in Groovehouse marked on the black T-shirts were reaching critical mass. I mean, there were so many people uniquely and uniformly expressing their individuality through wearing black. So there's a lot of black, you know, just, and people that look like, you know, this is the one time a year that they emerge from their parents' basement and see the light of day. And they're walking around like deer in the headlights because there's so many flashing lights and scantily clad women and abundant alcohol. And so all these geeks converge. And some of these people are, you know, some of these people are just brilliant beyond words. There's some very important players and notable people that go to this event and the presentations and the tracks for learning things with this whole undercurrent of Vegas and party and drink and whatever, socialize. So we have a large Houston contingent that shows up for the DEF CON, you know, people who currently live in Houston as well as people that are formerly from Houston. So we do have a pretty good crew of people that we run with through the course of the, I want to call it a festival, but it's kind of like a hacking festival. Good day, me lord, my lady. Day I probe your TCPIP pulse or something.
But, anachronism warning.
So this was my second year to go, and I mean I'm aware of the festival, and I know a lot of people that have been involved in the conference over the years, but my second one to go, and this year. Last year seemed to have a lot more fluidity for me. Everything kind of seemed to be rolling along just fine. Everybody's pacing themselves. But this year was a little more disjointed and fraught with lost voices, illness, and sleeping the entire day away.
Was this the first one in this new hotel?
Second one at the Rio Hotel.
Last year was the first, yeah. No, last year was the first.
Was it the first? Okay.
Yeah, first year at the Rio. And with that many people, apparently... At the Riviera, where it was before, it was elbow to elbow.
Yeah, there were hallways that the pinch points, you just couldn't get that many people in and out of a section of the building in time to turn around talks to where it was literally, they were trying to set up contraflow, and it just was not working.
Right.
They literally outgrew the convention hotel.
So it was good for me. The highlight for me was going for the second year and seeing a lot of people that I had seen previously that I knew before and some that I had met that just that year and that. And for me, the highlight was, dude, You're that guy from Slashdot.
A lot of people recognize Jay as that. Even people that had met Jay last year at the conference picked up on it. Like guys in North Dakota, guys from all over. And they were like, wow, we followed you on that. We didn't even know if you were going to make it to DEF CON because of all the drama in Houston. You know?
Wow. So, that guy. So that was my highlight was like, you know, I didn't think, yeah, that one guy at dinner said, yeah, and I said, I didn't think you were going to make it. I said, why? He said, but man, I saw you on the front page of Slashdot, you know, that craziness. And I said, and it's not like, you know, he went looking for it because I tweeted about it. It's like he reads Slashdot. These are the people that read and make Slashdot. So I was, that story was on the front page of a lot of these people at DEF CON. So some people realize that they're in the presence of craziness, and other people had no idea that crazy walked amongst them. But yeah, so that was my claim to fame. So what about you, Flicted? I'm going to make Bob ask because he's the senior DEF CON guy.
I think
it's your second year too.
Yeah, I think probably actually my favorite thing actually was meeting Mox. Mox, hanging out with him. He seemed pretty cool.
And who is that?
He's a guy I met standing in line in the swag line.
Bellevue, or I know he's from Washington. I can't remember which city it was.
Mox?
Yeah, Mox.
Yeah, what's his real name?
We don't say it.
Oh, we do. The guy with the
we don't remember it.
That's more accurate. The hipster guy.
The guy with the store? He wasn't a hipster.
Yeah, no, he had the little hipster hat.
I mean, he does live up in the Pacific Northwest. He's like a big fan of craft beer. You know, but up there, he's not really being a hipster. It's just that's how it is.
No, I know. I wasn't trying to be demeaning with that, but I was just making sure I was talking about the same guy. Yeah, he was cool.
Yeah, he was cool. And so
he kept showing up.
I text him every once in a while telling him like where we were going to be or whatever. But no, he was making the rounds, meeting people, and he was cool.
Well, he was volunteering at the Marrow. They had a blood Marrow match set up.
Yeah, be the match.
Be the match.
Yeah,
one of them.
Yeah, he did that so he could go to the ninja party, which he did go to.
Well, he was being very clever. It was his first time, and we were kind of you, especially you and Barrett, were like his kind of, you know, entrance into the festival. Into the conference, so he didn't know really anybody there. He knew of people there, but he didn't know anybody there. And so I thought he met in the badge line, but he met you in the swag line?
Yep, because I went immediately from the badge line to the swag line.
The lines were killer.
How many
hours?
I waited 2 hours in the badge line, and then I waited 2.5 hours in the swag line.
Wow.
Did you get anything? I was able to get the things that I wanted, unlike last year when they were all sold out.
What'd you get in the swag line?
I've got a gray Dickies shirt.
Didn't you get one?
I've got that same DEF CON shirt. No, they
you
didn't have them.
One, yeah.
I wanted one. I couldn't get one. I got a couple of pint glasses, frosted pint glasses that say DEF CON on them. Big DEF CON bottle opener.
And what did anybody bring me?
Just for the record, this was on sale in extra large on the last day, half price.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they had plenty of them this year, so. But there was some stuff they were out of. Some of the double XLs were gone. They have some really big conference attenders.
I think that the thing I didn't like, which I didn't really do last time, so I never really thought of it, I don't like taxis. I don't like taxi prices. Well, and that adds up really fast.
You're a rickshaw kind of guy.
And Las Vegas taxis aren't necessarily cheap.
I mean, it was pretty much like at least $7 to $9 minimum to go somewhere that you could like see that was like, you know, like 8 blocks away or whatever.
Yeah, as opposed to whatever like $35 to $50 it costs to eat. I wasn't sweating the taxi. So the limos were fun. I only got one limo ride this year.
Me too.
Barrett had two because he bailed on us.
Did I have two limo rides?
Yes, you did. You left to go to the Hofbrau House.
Oh, yeah, limo. Yeah, sure enough.
It made Flicted wait immediately.
Did I? I didn't realize you guys weren't there.
You didn't make me wait.
Well, no, he had to wait for Heather, and then he waited for me. And you said, we're bolting. Flicted will be there for you. So I had just gotten in.
All a blur.
Yeah. So...
That's it for me.
All right.
It's kind of funny.
One of the things, I think I went to less talks this year than I did. I slept more this year, I think. I don't think I stayed up later. I think I stayed up pretty late last year, too. But I don't know. I slept more, I think. So the exciting thing for me actually didn't happen this year. It was at the end of the closer when Dark Tangent said that he was trying to get Kraftwerk for next year.
Right. They were alluded to the Kraftwerk for this year.
Yeah.
We had Infected Mushroom play. We had MC Frontalot play.
Crystal Method.
Crystal Method play.
Yeah, Frontalot actually remembered us. He's the guy that came in and stopped it on the show a year or two ago.
Yeah, he's
that
the Nerdcore.
That was several years ago.
Nerdcore yeah. Rising, the Nerdcore documentary.
Posted the screen cap on our Tech Bytes Facebook page.
We saw that. We were marveling at it. I think I might have actually. I think it may no longer be there.
Oh, bummer.
You need it. Oh, no, it might be. Anyway, so what about you, Barrett?
Low point was probably missing the badge hacking talk or the welcome to DEF CON thing that first morning just because we had a super late night.
Oh, and that reminds me. They didn't have the camera, the feeds to the TVs.
Yeah, that's what we thought.
In room TVs, they were messed up.
It wasn't ironed
out. Almost all the time.
So not until really
last year, I watched several talks online, and this time, half the time you turn it on, it either nothing was there, or it was only audio or only video.
Yeah, last year the joke was it was being called BedCon, just because everyone was like watching talks from the bed, not having to get out of bed, a little bit of room service and what have you. So yeah, so missing the badge hacking talk, it definitely put us behind, a little bit behind in trying to decipher things and going with that. But I don't think we were really even in the game this year. We just kind of gave it up once that happened.
Do they post the talks online?
They will. So the deal is they actually sell some DVDs. Like a private company comes in and they, record everything and they'll put out pretty nicely polished DVDs later on for a price. Mm-hmm. And then, some will pop up on YouTube here and there. Some people record it on just all on their own, with mm-hmm. phones. And then, give it till about October, November. They'll actually start to, DEF CON will actually start putting them out there on the servers. But the mm-hmm. deal is, I think that the company that, did all the recording, they kind of get first crack.
They want exclusive, right?
Yeah, they want
right.
some exclusivity there. But, they'll eventually come out. So, yeah, if you want to see, now the cool thing is all of last year's talks are out. So if you want to see what was going on last year, you can go over to defcon.org, click on last year's links, and you can see all the videos that are out there. I think that the cool thing that I liked was that I went to a talk on backdooring hardware, which is pretty interesting because the deal is, you can run antivirus, you can run, all your spybot search and destroy things. You can actually tell if, your computer's infected on the hard drive, and then, you can remove that or reinstall the operating system. But the talk that I really got into was being able to install malware or different bad things on your system components, like on your graphics card or on your network card. Because if your system gets compromised, out of our listening audience right now, if you have issues or if you find some spyware on your machine or if you've ever had to restart from ground zero and install from, the DVDs from the ground up, do you go and actually make sure that you've got clean firmware on your graphics card and on your Ethernet card?
No, and
a lot of people do. And there's even a way to where those two things can talk back and forth and reinfect each other, which is pretty cool. So the demonstration that the speaker did in this particular talk was he had someone from the audience come up and walk up to a brand new Windows 7 64-bit install, and when you boot up the system and you put in your administrator password for the first time and everything, so more or less he had a laced network card that was in there. The guy comes up, puts in the password, and a minute and a half later, the speaker's inbox pops up an email that has the MAC address of the computer that they just typed in, the administrator's password, the network address, pretty much everything into where you could just come straight back into the machine, and none of that's detectable by any virus or anything else. So,
what did he have the payload installed on?
On network card.
On network card.
Yes, you can actually, then you can infect, the machine from the network card. And the nice thing is, well, not the nice thing, I guess the bad thing is that...
The nice thing. It's all about the wording.
Yeah, you've got full network communications without the firewall, without anything on the host ever seeing it. So you can actually, this is kind of the cool thing, if you wanted to have a botnet, and the whole thing about having a botnet is maintaining control of the botnet, is that it's very hard to get rid of because you can reinstall the operating system as many times
you're
as you want to, and it's never going to go
OS,
away.
Yeah.
Now, the scary part of this, and some of the numbers have been contested, is that the U.S. people are just now catching on, but countries like China, who make a lot of the telecommunications equipment that goes all over the world, estimates are as high as some of the more nefarious companies. They've got 80% of the hardware that's going out as backdoored. So you've got countries like Australia that's almost exclusively using Chinese telecom providers. Even there's gray market Cisco stuff that isn't really Cisco that sure looks like Cisco that has backdoors in there. So what this was just a talk to show how easy it was to do that on our stuff. And hey, the wake up call, it's probably going on in a lot of the network equipment out there.
Yeah, and I remember reading an article probably 2 years ago or something where they were a lot of concerns about firmware in routers and switches coming from China that had stuff where they could connect to them and look in on traffic flowing through them.
Well, they had a talk about how the Huawei or whatever routers
Yeah, that's same. Yeah, same thing. There's also talk on like backdooring, you know, home office, small office routers, which was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. So all this stuff was actually working exploits. It's not like, ooh, I've heard someone can do this. Ooh, I heard that's possible. These are people that have the exploit code. This stuff is out there. You know, you just have to kind of watch your back a little bit more. And if you want to, if you want to learn out, you know, come out and learn how to be a little bit more safe about some things, we can show you how to do a few of those things, possibly at this Friday's Geek Gathering. We'll definitely have the hardware badges, and we'll have some lock-picking stuff out, and we'll have some knowledge. Jay will have some stories, some more stories, as will the rest of us.
I will say the badges were very cool. The badges, you know, when you go to a conference and you get your badge that says you're a member of the conference and that you're allowed to go to the talks and stuff, the badges this year were actual computers on a lanyard that interfaced with the other badges. And you could, they have USB ports on them. They have potential for two PS2 ports, an infrared port, and they were talking to each other and
they're pretty
rewriting
cool.
each other's codes. It was very cool.
We'll bring them out. Yeah, they're microcontrollers that actually have their 8 cores. So, you know, everyone is like, ooh, I've got 4 cores on my home computer. The conference badges actually ship with 8 cores. So we'll bring that out. And we'll actually have a brand new badge that has not yet been taken out of the bag that it came in from the conference to where we can open that up. And if people want to try to solve some puzzles or interface with it or try and hack it in the 2 hours that they've got during the Geek Gathering, you know, they can do that. And we'll also have some lock picking stuff, too, where if you want to come out and learn how to pick locks. We've got some setup stuff.
That's
so
the new thing now.
That is the new thing.
Hardware
lock
hacking.
Sport. Hardware hacking. So that's pretty much it. So Aperture, Bagby and McGowan,
yeah,
Friday, 7:30.
Yeah, go to geekradio.com. We've got all the information up there about the Geek Gathering. If you want to come out on Friday, it should be a lot of fun. Last month's was a great deal of fun, and this month will be even more so.
That was a huge DEF CON time. I'm glad we didn't try to run the bed music because it would have been out for the last 14 minutes.
All right, well, if you're sick of that, you'll be glad to know that it's over. Time to move on to the next round of calls. It's 713-526-5738 here in Houston on KPFT Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up?
All right, up next, we're going to take Paul.
Paul, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. Got my hands on HP Pavilion 8000 made in 03.
Wow.
Don't know what's in it. A couple aspects I would like to just get a little feedback on. It's got a Pentium 4. Can I upgrade the processing? Was it a good computer? What was the knock on it? And is it, you know, still worth keeping? Is it worth keeping and trying to upgrade? I got
you
it
know,
for free. It's got
I
a
was...
big 24-inch screen. It's, you know, 20-inch screen, something like that. Wide screen. Beautiful computer. I have no idea what the brand new retail was, and you know,
it doesn't matter. You've got about a dollar's worth of computer right there. I mean, you got a computer that people would struggle to get rid of. 2003 is considered quite ancient technology. That is 9 years old. So I'm trying to even think of what a computer was like 9 years ago. I remember to give you an idea. I work for a company. I've been at this company about 10 years. I've got computers. We had a pile of computers that were about that age that we just boxed up and gave to a recycler.
Really?
Yep, really. So hopefully you didn't pay much for it.
Well, it was free. I just wanted to first trying to upgrade the Pentium 4. Maybe
there's never, you don't upgrade a laptop.
You, don't, six or something.
You say it's a laptop?
Yeah. Okay. It's a big, nice one.
You don't upgrade a laptop. You don't replace processors in laptops. You don't. The most you do with a laptop is you add memory or you replace the hard drive. And I'm thinking on a 9-year-old computer, you probably got a 20 gig hard drive. Would it even be that big? Yeah, it might be that big. 10 to 20 gig hard drive on a 2009 computer. So
2003.
Three, I'm sorry, 2003. What's the model number again?
You can get a new one for like $300.
Pavilion 8000 something.
Yeah, I just wondered, was it a great computer? Is it worth
it? Might have been a great time in its day, but in the terms of technology.
Time marches on.
On a scale of 1 to 10, it was probably a 9 when you got it. And
or
you got to select.
When
it was brand new, it was probably a 9. And then you've got to take one away for every year that you've had it. So let's do the math on that. Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Computer years are like dog years. So it's 70 years old.
It's an AMD Turion 64, according to this. It's got half a gig of RAM.
Maybe up to a gig, if he was lucky.
But it does have a 100 gig hard drive.
Okay, so this is a Pentium 4 processor, so
DV 8000 was made over a period of time. It was made into the 2005, from what I'm seeing. So it may have had a, and they also make HP makes PCs with a variety of processors. They'll make some that with the same model number.
Now, the ZD 8000 I'm seeing has AMDs. The Pentium.
What do you want to do with it? Just kind of surf the web, or do you want to get how much life out of this?
If it's relative to today, if it's slow, if the processing is ancient and lacking,
is this your only computer? Have you ever had a computer before this one?
Yeah, I got a big Dell. I got a big monster Dell. In my home office.
You're familiar with how
computer. I'm not really a computer guy. I may go on Amazon and buy CDs. I haven't checked my email in a year.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. You don't have to be a computer person to own a computer, Paul. All right, let me ask you this. This computer that you got, did you find it in a dumpster, or did somebody give it to you?
It was left in an empty house after someone had moved.
Okay. have you turned this computer on?
Yeah.
Does it turn on?
Whoever the password belonged to, I have no idea. So I really have no way of.
So you don't have any way right now of even getting into the computer. So you would have to consider either breaking into the PC or reloading the software so that you would have all your user accounts.
I've got an idea for him. With a computer that old, he's probably not going to like running any kind of modern Windows thing. Go get an Ubuntu Live CD.
He's not a computer guy. He just told you he's not a computer guy.
Yeah, but he can't put a DVD in there.
That's not going to happen.
If you're going to say, as soon as you say Ubuntu, it's a meltdown.
I want to make converts, but yeah, I guess you're right.
I'm going to disagree with Jay on a part of this. I had a... it probably does have a Pentium 4 processor because HP made machines with this model with different processors in it. I ran a 3.4 gigahertz Pentium 4 processor from about that era for up until about 2008 on a system. And I had 4 gig of RAM on the motherboard, which was the most it would do. And it was running Windows Vista. It ran Windows Vista pretty serviceably. About the only thing you want to do with this is possibly look into upgrading the RAM if it only has half a gig, if that's indeed what it has. And if you can find that cheaply, and if you're up to doing it, just as a hobby, as an experiment, put it in there. If you can figure out a way to get past the password, do that. If you're going to spend more than $100 putting in the memory, it's probably not worth it, and you may or may not be able to find it that cheap. But
wow. It's heavy. It's big. It's heavy. I mean, in its day, it was probably a monster. Right. But
do it as an experiment, and do it as something for fun. But don't expect you may or may not at the end have an actual usable computer.
Well, the thing I want to impart to you is that there was a reason why it was left behind.
Yes.
Okay? It's not like you came across the magic lantern and you're going to rub it and a genie's going to come out. What you're going to do is you're going to rub it and some really old technology is going to barf out on you.
Okay. Didn't get lucky.
No, you didn't really get all that lucky. I mean, I've got computers. I literally had a stack of Dell laptops that were not even as old as this one were that went off to the recycle company because they just literally were useless to mess with.
Depending on what you want to do and how much patience you have and how far behind you want to be on what you can do on the internet nowadays, you might be fine.
It's also how the computer was treated in life. You know, if the computer actually is in full functioning mode and actually works, it might be okay. But if the person who owned it before didn't treat it well, if it's got a hard drive that's trying to die, or it's got faulty memory, or it's blue screening and it's causing, having a bunch of errors, at the very least, I've had this rant before on this show, if you're going to get a used computer, the main thing you want to have is the software to reload it to factory fresh. Okay. So you either need a copy of the HP software that came with it, which you could probably contact HP and get for maybe $10 or $20 if they still have it, or maybe you can download it. And so you can put this disc in there and get that computer back to factory fresh the way it was when it was bought, or buy an XP CD and load that on there. And then you have to go to HP and get the driver. So you're talking about a little bit of work
Can I add speed? If I can add speed and memory, I'll probably be okay.
You can add memory.
No speed. Oh, well, I guess you told me what I really need to know, because memory will make it go.
Hey, Paul. Paul, memory will make it go faster than it goes now. But you don't even know how fast it goes because you haven't been able to log into it.
Right.
So you don't even know.
True.
So it might be plenty fast what you're wanting to do, but you've got a number of challenges ahead of you. And see, and all the money that you saved by stumbling upon this computer abandoned in this house, you're gonna pay for it. It's like the magic bean. You know, you think you got something, but you don't.
I pay for it with frustration.
Yes, exactly. You pay for it with effort and frustration, because you either need to be a computer guy or you need to know somebody who's a computer guy who's going to be really gentle and patient and take the time and help you get it up and running.
There's going to be some sweat equity.
That's it.
Okay. Sweat equity. I think for $300, I think Walmart's got, for $350. $450.
Yeah, you're talking about a relatively reasonable price to buy a brand new computer. It will be light years ahead of this thing. I mean, like I said, this is a 9-year-old computer. The technology is moderate, but it's very limited. And trying to learn or trying to get up to speed on computer tech on technology that's this outdated. Now, a computer like this would be of value to somebody who knows what they're doing, maybe, they can say, this is what that computer's capable of, and I want to be able to set it up to do certain things. But as a primary machine, it's going to be less than desirable to have.
Paul, was this the only thing in the house?
What else did they leave?
I got a big Dell that's been upgraded.
In the house where you found it.
Was there anything else left behind?
Oh, no. The guy I think he was a computer person, and chances are it was just found in a closet. It's just something that he just didn't bother to put in a trash can.
Very true.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, but thanks a lot, you guys. You've been very helpful.
All right. Thanks for your call.
When I finally got rid of that Pentium 4 system, it was still running fairly well. Now, I know what I'm doing with it.
That's my point.
Right. I know what I'm doing with it. But it was kind of fun to keep it going for as long as I've kept it going. The iMac I have now is 5 years old, and it's running great, and it's got,
Well, if he can walk up to that computer and log into it and actually get it to come to the desktop, and you can start playing with it and do stuff with it, probably fine, but right now what he's looking at is...
He's looking at a password problem.
He's got to break the password.
Another analogy to that is, it's one thing, if you have an old car and you own it since it was new, then odds are you kind of pretty much know what to do to prop it up and keep it going, like an old computer. But if you don't, it's like buying a $1,000 car. There's no such thing, because you can immediately be dropping lots of money in it and not necessarily getting any kind of performance.
Right. It's not like buying a well-maintained vintage car. It's like buying a junker.
Somebody found that they left behind.
Right.
They didn't even want to pay to move it.
It's not like you walked into a garage sale and found a Collar Yastrzemski card or something. All right, Groove House.
I've got a Pentium 90.
Well, I guess the thing that's funny is how people think differently about it is, if it was like a suit, would he like wear if somebody left the thing when they moved out?
That's the computer I was buried in.
If he found a disco suit, would he still wear it?
He might.
That'd be kind of cool.
He might. All right.
Time for another call. That they were too lazy to even. They didn't even want to put the effort to walk it to the trash can.
Yeah, but he said it had a big widescreen monitor, so that's a lot of.
Well, that was a 17-inch laptop.
You can play DVDs. You say it's a lot of real estate for stickers.
Yeah. Screensaver would look awesome on it. That's all you need. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to take Mark.
Mark, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
All right.
Swarm of bees.
Segwaying right into ancient technology. I have a flip phone, and I have an air card, and I have a landline.
And I'm paying about, for all three of them, about $150 a month. I like it, no problem with it, but I'm wondering, am I wasting my money? Can I do the same thing, or can I I use the air card because of travel, and that works fine. But is there some way, should I go for an upgrade on a cell phone that can also get my internet, and then get something like, I don't know, DSL or whatever with the digital phone? What would you guys?
Well, right now you have a flip phone and you have an air card, which provides you internet access on your laptop while you travel. Is that correct?
Right.
All right. So at home, you have what, DSL?
No, I use the air card at home.
How much data are you limited to on the air card?
It's unlimited.
It is. Who is it through?
Verizon.
Verizon is unlimited.
He's
data.
He's got a grandfather.
Yeah, okay, so unlimited data.
And I average less than three gigs.
Well, what I would consider possibly doing would be to see if your plan, if your contract with Verizon would allow you to upgrade to a smartphone.
Uh-huh.
With a hotspot capability. They'll at that point want to change your contract, though.
Yeah, they've already they called and offered me a deal, same money, unlimited talk time, but limited data.
Yes, that's
data.
Their new shared data plan.
Yeah.
Right. So your air card right now, unfortunately, as long as that hardware holds up, you're probably in good shape. But I guess you could, I wonder if you could transfer that to a new air card.
That's a good question, and the other question is, I don't know if they still offer, well, if their new equipment works on 3G, because 3G maybe not as good, but it has a lot better coverage area, out in the remotes, out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, the LTE Wi-Fis will fall back to 3G if it can't find LTE.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. The thing is that I don't know about the MiFis, the hotspots, but with Verizon smartphones.
Yeah, I usually am not in a place where I get Wi-Fi. I mean, I'm talking about
Hold on. If you upgrade to an LTE MiFi, it's possible that they may force you to drop the unlimited.
Oh,
they're
yeah,
doing that
yeah,
with
I know
the smartphones.
They're gonna do that. But 3 gig, is it gigs, I guess, gigabytes of data, isn't that about that? Anyway, they said I'm averaging 2-something. So.
Yeah, if you're averaging 2, the one thing with LTE, if you watch any video with that, some services like Netflix will increase the quality when it sees a faster stream.
Right.
And so you'll end up with more data and you'll chew through your data cap faster.
I'm getting about 1.2 megs on it. And like I said, it's fine for home. It's fine in the sticks. And but I suspect there's probably new technology that something's better for me.
Well, I mean, there are some really nice phones out there that have, that do all that, but whether or not you need to switch to a smartphone or not, that's really something.
Yeah, as long as I can hook it to a laptop, that's more what I'm interested in, so I can have all my files and just use it for just strictly internet access through the laptop. And I really don't care about an iPhone or, sitting in a restaurant. Reading your email.
Right. Well, I would continue to go down the hotspot pathway in your situation to see if you can maintain that unlimited data plan. I think that they're going to eventually find a way to get you out of that because they're going to only have 4G or LTE devices available, and there is a different price for 4G than there is for 3G. So they're going to say eventually that they no longer offer just 3G only. And your contract's null and void, and you're going to get on a limited data plan on the 4G.
Right.
At that point, then you have to decide whether or not you just want to combine that up into a phone that does hotspot and also has all the smartphone features, or if you want to continue to just buy, because they will sell you just a hotspot. I mean, you can buy a Verizon iPad, and it has hotspot capabilities, but you're paying, it's not unlimited data, though.
Right, and the coverage would be the same as what I have now.
Yes,
I mean, as far as geographical area.
Right. I mean, it like Dwight said, it falls back to the 3G
right.
network.
right.
if it doesn't see the 4G. And in fact, I was falling back to 3G quite a lot in Vegas.
And it will, in fact, if it doesn't see 3G, they'll fall back to EVDO, which is the even slower.
Right, right. And that was the first thing when 4G came out. They offered me that and said, "Well, what a deal!" And I don't know. I asked them. I said, "Well, what will that do to my coverage out in really remote areas?" And they said, "Well, it won't work for you." I don't know. Well, they just didn't know.
unless they're talking about a particular model that does not fall back, but all the ones I know about do.
Okay. The other part of the equation is I'm paying $35 a month to AT&T for a regular landline, and I was thinking maybe it would be cheaper to go with a digital phone and a home internet connection, a permanent home internet connection.
Well, it depends. You know, you get various bundles at various prices from both
right.
Comcast, and you kind of have to dig into their website and see if you combine X with Y and Y with Z, what that looks like. It's really hard to tell unless you sit down for yourself and look around on their sites.
Right. My thought is I've got one extra phone number that I don't really need. I'm not paying for the air card. I'm paying for the home phone, and I'm paying for a cell phone.
Well, if you set up with the digital phone on the with DSL through DSL or through Comcast, you're going to have another phone number anyway, and that's essentially the same thing as a landline.
Right.
So you may not even want to think about digital phone at home and just go with your cell phone.
Well, no, I need both phone numbers, or one's business and one's home. So.
Right. Well, again, look at the pricing on that and look at the various bundles you get and make your decision from there.
Yeah.
The one thing to keep in mind about, particularly on cable bundles, if you're looking at cable as opposed to DSL, a lot of those prices are temporary. They're
right.
like for 9 months
right.
or, you know, a year, and then after a year they go up. Now, usually you can call them and say, "I'm going to drop it. This is too expensive," and they'll give you another deal. But keep that in mind when you look at these good prices on the
bundles. Okay. Well, I guess it's not that there's some new technology out there that I'm just overlooking. I'm pretty much stuck with what I'm using.
Right. Unless you're in Kansas City.
and what's special about Kansas City?
Google Fiber.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Mm.
Yes, we all want Google Fiber, but we're not in Kansas City.
It'd be a lot more regular with Google Fiber. All right, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
I think he worked on a bee farm. I feel like I kept swatting bees.
I pictured him in a beekeeper suit for
yeah.
a phone call.
Yeah, exactly.
I could trade some honey for some broadband. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air. We got a little time left in the show, so we probably have time to take your call if you wanted to call in. We got two calls in the queue, open lines after that. Keep them coming. Groove House?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take David.
David, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show. It's great.
Thanks.
I got a PC, and it's got a audio interface I hooked up to it, and it. I'm getting clicks and pops when I talk through a microphone and I record to a program. It starts like not real bad or nothing, but you can hear some clicks and stuff like that when you play it back. I'm just wondering what might be causing it.
Well, when you connect the microphone or your audio input into the PC, you need to turn your computer down. I mean, your radio down if that's up. But if you connect, hello? All right. If you connect, no, don't hang up yet. When you connect your stuff to the computer, how are you connecting it?
USB.
USB. So you have a USB device that allows you to connect the microphone to that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's made. I've seen those devices before. Those actually should work rather well for getting audio into the computer via USB. pops and clicks would tend to indicate that there was something interfering or a short in the wire, possibly. What's the history or the legacy of the microphone that you're using? Is it new?
Yeah, it's we call it XLR and a dynamic. It's a dynamic microphone.
Have you got that going down to eighth inch? Is the jack on the USB device, is it eighth inch or quarter inch?
No, it's XLR.
It is XLR, and it connects right up to the USB.
Yeah, and then it goes USB to the PC, and then it, I guess that's how it connects, to the PC.
Okay.
You know, it sounds real good, but man, the clicks and pops, and that's not real, not real apparent and everything, but, it's there, you know?
Well, I know that for audio into a PC that there are, it's probably the USB device that you're using to bring it in. Do you know what brand or model USB device it is that's allowing you to convert the XLR to your computer?
Oh, I can't remember right off.
Okay, like I said, I've seen those devices and they're not, was it expensive?
No, I think it's like, 80 bucks.
Okay, that's I consider that to be a little on the expensive side. So.
I was going to say I use Mac, but I've got a Griffin that's eighth inch to USB, and then I have a Shure mic that's XLR on one side. The cable's XLR on one side and eighth inch on the other.
Right, but this one actually the device
is XLR on both sides.
XLR on both sides, which would tend to indicate that it's pretty much a quality device.
Some Tascam for around that price.
Right, online. Because I know that the USB ones that I've seen, like from Sound Blaster made one at one point, and they were like, it was only like 20 or 30 bucks. So the click, determining where that's coming from, it may be a function of even the software that you're having some kind of, but it's not skipping, is it? I mean, you're not getting a loss of signal. It's just a click and a pop, right?
Yeah, and it, like I say, it ain't real apparent, but it's there enough to know.
Do you have different mics and different cable XLR cables? You try to make sure it's not the mic or the cable.
Yeah, and I switched cables, and I also got a cheap USB mic, and I plugged straight into the computer, and it's been the same thing. So it seems like it's a USB or something.
Is there a way to ground it?
I don't think there's going to be a grounding issue necessary. Is it a laptop or desktop?
Desktop.
Okay. Is it a? How old is the computer?
Oh, like 6 months. Oh,
okay, so it's pretty new. All right.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Have you tried different USB ports?
Yeah, did that too.
I'm trying to see. I bet you there is some.
Have you tried different recording software?
Uh huh. Yeah, to like three different programs doing the same thing.
Yeah, so it's got to be hardware.
I wonder if it's getting some kind of interference from any. Okay. Let's see. Clicks and pops can ruin a recording, not to mention causing vast amounts of. Let me see. There's a website called soundonsound.com. Let's see. Clicks and pops can ruin a recording, not to mention causing vast amounts of annoyance and wasted time. Tracking down their cause can be far from easy, but our easy step-by-step troubleshooting guide is here to help. So, yeah, I found a troubleshooting guide. Let's see. Most obvious suspects are things like audio interface buffer size, which, depending on your software, we should give you the ability to control that. All right, here's what I did, and here's what I recommend that you do. I did a Google search on pops and clicks recording to PC, and I found a great article. I found several of them, but there are articles written on how to eliminate pops and clicks when you're doing audio recording on a PC and things to look for.
Okay.
To fine-tune that, because it's a pretty big... Not a big, but there's a large an enthusiastic group of people who do PC audio recording. So there's going to be a lot of online information from people that have gone through and faced the same challenges that you're facing. So Google search, and literally just like this, pops and clicks recording to PC, and you'll find this article looks like it might be just the thing.
And I got some info on line five. So, David, after you hang up, turn up your radio and listen to this.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks for your call. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Up next, we're going to speak to a sound engineer
who
believes he knows what's going on. So, Kit, you're on the air.
Kit.
All right. Hey, guys. What's happening? I think it's bit rate or in sample rate, the device that is recording into, like the box that actually is the interface, has software in it that can control bit rate, sample rate, and if they're not compatible, you will get crazy clicks and stuff. It took me quite a while to figure it out, but it's all it is.
It's the bit rate. Yeah, well, that's what they're saying here. If according to the website that I found, it talks about samples. Is that
so? The sampling rate.
Like it could be set at 48, and then the actual software in the computer is running at 44.
So you need
and
to
so
make...
it creates this weird, like, random popping and clicking that is not as loud as everything else. But if you're trying to get a clean recording, you definitely hear it.
So it's like it's going to be basically filling in data or have gaps in data that's going to cause it to make sounds.
Yeah, but I know that's what it is. I mean, I was using bigger systems than that and on Macs, but it's exact. I guarantee that's what it is.
So if he could go into the software that he's using to record, or is it the software that interfaces with the device?
It probably is the recording software. If he goes into preferences or something, there will be something that says sample rate or bit rate. And if he changes it, or even playback engine, like his computer might not be able to handle all of it. So, I mean, it should, but it's a setting like that.
Okay.
You kind of step it down. It'll be like in kilohertz, probably, like 44.5 kilohertz or something like that.
And if not that, you can set sample rate so it's like CD quality or higher and all that. And sometimes the actual interface box only goes to a certain point, and so it's trying to record higher rate than it can sync in or whatever.
Okay.
But it works.
Hey, as a sound engineer, did the ferrite loops actually make a difference on USB cables? Will that take out any noise or any kind of issues?
Yeah. I've never even had to do any of that once I got the sample right. Those USB things work really seamlessly. I've never had a problem with them at all, so probably I don't have to do anything other than just plug it in and then set the sample rate.
So you're thinking pretty confidently that it's a function of sample rate. Since it's a new computer, it's a USB device, it's a higher-end USB device.
Yeah, it's sample rate or bit rate. It's in the preferences, and if he just switches them and then reboots, close the system down, or just the program and open it back up again, it'll probably work.
Awesome.
All right. Well,
but yeah, you guys rock, man. It's crazy. I listened to you guys off and on for years, and I actually knew an answer. It was awesome.
It was actually somebody calling with an answer that
real
sounded
answer.
Good.
Yeah.
It's like usually we get like, well, I didn't hear the whole question, but the guy said something about hard drives, and I want to tell you what you should do. Yeah, so I'm glad it wasn't one of those.
Oh, it's kind of crazy because I'm like right down, I'm actually on Love It. I'm like right by you guys.
The call is coming from within the station.
We could use an emergency sound engineer from time to time.
Anytime, man. I actually used to live next door to what was 101, so I was right by K50.
Wow.
Excellent.
All right. Well, 101's back on the internet now.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, I need to do that. I need to check them out.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, man. Thanks.
Bye. All right. Bye. All right. Well, that was good.
That was good.
Hopefully that would actually be the answer. I hope that guy got to hear that.
That sounded about right.
It sounded legit. Looks
sounded
legit.
Like legit.
See, the dangerous thing about this is this restores our confidence in people to call them with answers.
Right. But
this
I'm,
will be the one golden one.
But you weren't here last week when we had two of them, and neither one of them were really all that good.
Yeah. We take questions. We don't take solutions. All right. Up next, let's take Rodney.
I'm not listening. La, 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 la.
Rodney, you're on the air.
Rodney.
Hey, how y'all doing? I want to thank you in advance. Well, I bought a Samsung Galaxy 2, little 7-inch, and it turns out to be the Wi-Fi kind. I kind of heard a guy named Mark talking. Did you have to have a hotspot all the time, or I heard him say something about an air cord. Is that a possibility for it?
That is, well, it's a possibility that if you wanted to subscribe to a data plan using a air card or what they call a mobile hotspot. Yeah, you could do that. what does Verizon charge for like a MiFi or close to or approximately with this? You know,
well, I think.
Can you get a data plan for a reasonable price, or are you talking about you have to get a cell phone and a data plan?
No, you can get, if you want a MiFi, there's a data-only price for it.
Okay.
So, and it's usually a little, it's actually, I'm not sure with their shared data plans if MiFis are now included in those, but often they're higher. Often that's a more expensive deal.
How would that compare, like, to a Clearwire? Like,
well, how would that compare to, like, buying a data plan if he had a tablet that was data-enabled?
It is less expensive. The data plans, particularly on if you're speaking about Verizon specifically, those are now all part of that shared data plan. So, right. But I believe that when you, but you have to, in order to do that, I think with the shared data plan, you have to have a smartphone attached to it. Otherwise, there's a separate tablet plan.
Well, so what tablet do you have?
Well, it's a Samsung Galaxy 2, the little 7-inch.
Right.
I didn't know it's two different kinds. It's one with the Wi-Fi.
How old? When did you get it?
1 week ago.
You should be able to, if you wanted to exchange it up for the proper kind, you might want to do that.
Okay. Well, I gave it away. I bought it for a gift, and I gave it to him already.
Okay.
Well, what she does, she uses it at the house with the router and the AT&T.
So right, she has access to Wi-Fi at the house, but if she goes out...
Yeah, she's got to go to Applebee's or somewhere that's already got it.
Right, well, if you buy, like, an air card, that's going to be two devices that she has to keep track of.
Oh, sure. Okay, the air card is, like, you have to have phone service with...
Not necessarily. No, you could go talk to Verizon or AT&T or Sprint and check them out and see how much they charge to get you an air card or a mobile hotspot and what your monthly rate's going to be to do that. And usually if they sell you on a plan, you'll get the device discounted or whatever, but you know, it's still, you're looking at paying for the device plus the data plan. And that's another piece of hardware that she has to lug around. Even though it's a small profile, it's kind of small. It's about the size deck of cards are smaller. But it's one more thing she has to hang on to. So maybe if it's only a week old, you still have the receipt. And you say, look, hey, sweetie, you know, I bought you this really cool thing, but I want to give you something better.
Getting something better.
Going to get something better. So can I upgrade you?
Yeah.
You know, chicks love to hear that. Can I upgrade you?
Yeah, I hear a song about that.
Let me. So, you know, so I would consider that if it's a week old and if it hadn't gotten torn up yet, you know, get it all back in the box and go and just pay up and get the one with the data plan and, you know, that has the data capability and pay for a data plan on it.
Okay. When I bought it, I didn't know it was a difference in them like that. Well,
that's understandable.
What is that? Well, really, what I bought it for was for, you know, she's a school teacher, put a little spreadsheets on there and put a, what do you call that? I can't call the name of it, but it's a little deal. They got the information on, you stick it in there and she can see the spreadsheet.
Right, okay.
And, but now she likes the internet too, so now that's what I got.
They always do.
Upgrade.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for your time. What's the review on that? You know, the Galaxy 2, you know,
The Galaxy tablet's gotten some great reviews from what I've seen. It's a nice little device, and it's not horribly expensive, from what I know. It's a great device. You know, I guess you got to really love them to buy them something like an iPad or something.
Yeah.
You know, but a nice Galaxy, you know, an Android tablet, I mean, it's going to be able to browse the web. You can install apps. You can read books on it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. Reading a Kindle.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know. So the only difference in this one and the other one is that, you know, you got the internet all the time.
Right, and you pay for that by the month, but it also has the hardware that does it.
Okay. Now, you know, I was on YouTube, and I was, you know, I kept trying to figure out, it must be something to this, you know, I can get the internet if I know the password. You know, we went to a lot of places, or, you know, it would pop up.
Right, because they have Wi-Fi available, but it's protected, and you have to have the password to get on it.
Okay. And so,
Well, listen, we got to cut you short, but hopefully that gives you the information that you need.
It did. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Rodney. Have a good night.
Take care now.
All right.
All right.
Next up, Groovehouse. So
last
the speed
up,
round.
Last up on the show, we're going to take Kay.
Kay, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. How are you doing?
Okay.
I just have a really quick question. I'm not very technical, so I was just wondering if you could tell me if you think there's a potential that at some point in time cell phones will have the ability to have two different phone numbers on them like a landline does?
Yes.
They make
yes.
them now.
They make
they're
them
kind
now.
Of expensive.
They're not very common in the U.S., but in some other parts of the world, it's actually really common or fairly common for people to have phones that have two SIM card slots in them, and you can switch between the two SIM cards.
Do you know how long it'll be until they start doing that in the States?
No, we don't have no.
I don't know if they... I've never looked for ones in the States. I'm sure you could probably buy imported ones, though. I mean, on eBay
there are,
or
like, dual SIM
like
phones out there. They're pretty expensive.
That'd be,
they're, they
it'd be a little bit on the complex side if you're talking about and, swapping out SIM cards.
An easy way to do it, if you're just looking for two numbers on one phone, it's really easy to stack two Google Voice numbers on one Android phone where you can have two numbers ring through. And depending on what number's ringing, you can even have different ringtones on it. But okay, you've got to go... Those can't be existing numbers. Those are two... new Google Voice numbers.
I just have like a flip phone, like a Motorola Verizon flip phone. I don't have like an iThing or anything
right.
that has those.
But if you're talking about buying a new phone anyway, if you were ever going to do this, but you'd have to buy a new phone, and then you could sign up for two Google Voice numbers and have those forward to the same phone number. But they would be coming that you could give out two different numbers, but they're internet numbers. That they would forward to your actual phone. You could do that to this phone even if you wanted to.
Oh, I could.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But my
phone doesn't get like internet or anything.
No, it doesn't have to because the phone number, if I give you my Google phone number, you call this number and it calls my Google number. Then I go onto my Google account and tell it
what number to forward to.
So it just forwards to a real phone, which could be your phone.
It'll ring the same way for both numbers.
And you won't know which number they're calling.
Although you can, because in the Google setup, you can either tell it to forward the number that's calling so it shows up, or show the Google number that you're getting called at on your phone.
Look into Google Voice and check that out, because you get a Gmail account, you can get one Google phone number, you get another Gmail account, you get another Google phone number, and you can configure those to do a number of different things.
Wonderful, and I can just look that up online somewhere. It'll tell me how to do it.
Yep. Well,
hopefully, yeah.
Fantastic. I appreciate your help.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Well, we are out of time. We don't have the ability to take more calls. If you have questions, we've got answers via the internets, and you can give us a call or give us a contact via the website, and also come out to the Geek Gathering this Friday. And avoid Groovehouse at all costs, which will be easy to do because he won't be there. But Dwight will be there, and he'll be happy. We'll still be doing our DEF CON hangover thing, so that'll be fun. All right. Well,
7:30,
give or take. Come on
not
out.
Sure.
And, well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flipted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse. Follow me on Instagram.
Awesome.
On Saturday, August 4th, beloved Texas musical group The Flatlanders will return to the Crichton Theater in downtown Conroe for one performance only. This year, The Flatlanders, featuring legendary Texas singer-songwriters Joe Ely, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and Butch Hancock, celebrate their 40th anniversary with the Odessa Tapes, a collection of recordings made in 1972 and never before released to the public. During this very special performance in Conroe, the Flatlanders will preview songs from the new CD and will also have a limited number of pre-release tour copies of the CD available only at the concert. Folk Family Revival will open the show at 8 o'clock on August 4th at the Crichton Theater, located at 234 Main Street in downtown Conroe. Tickets for the Flatlanders and Folk Family Revival are now on sale at CrichtonTheater.org or call 936-441-7469, extension 201. Presented by the Friends of Conroe, a nonprofit organization, and KPFT Houston.
KPFT has a fun drive coming up, and we need your help to make it a success. Our phone volunteer trainings are coming up, and we could really use your help. You'll meet KPFT listeners just like you and help this community radio station. Your efforts make a difference and can make this a fun, fast, and successful drive. We hold phone volunteer training regularly to accommodate all kinds of schedules. Visit kpft.org for a complete list of training dates. If you are a seasoned phone volunteer, call 713-526-4000 to sign up for a volunteer shift. You're tuned into Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpft Houston.